Jason, please tell me you had the opportunity to enjoy the game-winning goal from Megan Keller of the United States to take the gold home against Canada.
Skating on right now.
What'd you say?
I did not. We have figure skating on right now.
Did I spoil anything? Hope not.
No, you didn't spoil it. I don't live in that weird world where people like want to pretend that something hasn't happened yet and like, don't tell me what happened. I taped the game.
Yeah.
No.
I agree.
I appreciate
don't do
you letting
either.
Me know.
But I just wanted to make sure because, you know, you got
to
make sure everyone.
No, I did not. I did not get to see it. When they did a live look in on NBC and I did not switch over to USA, it was 1-0 Canada still. So I missed both the game tying and game winning goals, apparently.
Spectacular hockey.
Some
electric
great moments. Jason, we heard a little bit of Sylvie on Wilde and Tausch this morning. Do you regret wishing the Bears were good? Because you mentioned the level of douchiness that some of the fans have.
No, I mean, there's a lot of douchey people that I have to deal with. Some, you know, a couple times a week, sometimes just in my mentions on social media. Hey, if you want to make assumptions, then you go right ahead.
I'm jumping to conclusions right now.
Exactly.
Jason, your pain.
Yes, I'm sure. And for you, it's more than 2 days a week.
Wait, what?
No, again, I was just by the way, like I make jokes all the time on Wilde and Tausch, and Tausch generally ignores them or maybe smirks. So I appreciate that got a reaction because that's purely what that was. That was going for the joke.
Well, he hears them a lot more every day, so I can see why he may not react to them.
And then I did zing you when Sylvie mentioned you by name about being a douchey fan yourself, and I said, yeah, just ask Matt LaFleur. But the bottom line is that I'm not to the point of regretting it because I do think it's going to make it way more compelling. I still believe that it's better for me, not for Packers fans. You know, I'm sure your brother is loving the fact that right now, you know, the Bears are the ones that have the bragging rights, just like Sylvie is. But at the same time, like, yeah, it's a little bit obnoxious. My expectation, though, is that, you know, at some point here, the Packers will win another game and maybe they'll win two in a row like the Bears have. And it'll go back and forth for the next decade and we'll have fun with the Matt LaFleur, Ben Johnson disdain for each other and everything else. So it's just more interesting than the Packers winning 11 in a row from when Matt LaFleur took over, for me. But again, I don't expect fans to feel that way.
You brought up two things like right there. Like that will continue. The Ben Johnson, Matt LaFleur, you know where the camera's going to pan after the game for the handshake. When you mention Jordan Love and Caleb Williams' name in the same sentence, Bears fans say he's Jordan Love's trash and Caleb Williams is this and back and forth. So, yeah, I think there are some compelling storylines, no doubt. What definitely was the thing that I think Kyle can attest to most was 21-3 and having that loom over you in the offseason hurts the most.
Yeah, I because I'm wired differently in terms of how I consume sports and not being a fan per se, like, you know, I just find those folks annoying because, you know, they haven't shut up since the playoff game. And I understand and that's what happens, right? I mean, you know, not everyone's like Sylvie who isn't obnoxious. And if you heard him today, he said, if Micah Parsons doesn't get hurt, I don't know if the Bears win any of the three games, right? But it's the bottom line is that this is the we've been told for, you know, for me, my 50 plus years on the earth, this is the greatest rivalry in sports. I don't know if that's true. There's obviously a bias here for Chicagoans and Wisconsinites, but it is a great rivalry. But great rivalries need to be even and they need to be competitive. And for the vast majority of my career covering this team, because I covered Favre and Rodgers, it wasn't. And so I am going to enjoy it. I'm not going to let the douchey behavior by Bears fans drag me down. And I can't wait for these games next year. I'm guessing they'll be in prime TV slots, whether they're night games or the America's Game of the Week on Fox. And I think they're going to be close and competitive and fun. And then one fan base or the other will be douchey toward the other one after their team wins.
And one maybe in Indiana coming up in a couple years.
Unbelievable.
That is truly wild. Truly wild. But another thing that was wild that happened the other day, Rich Bisaccia stepping down as head coach. I'm still dwelling on that, Jason. So I'm wondering if you have gleaned any more information from that. My question to you is, who was the decision maker on this? Was this LaFleur telling Bisaccia he's got to go and they framed it as stepping down? Or Bisaccia saying, you know what, I'm stepping away, not because of anything Matt LaFleur has said? My other question is timing. Why didn't this happen a month ago, Jason, when there was actually then an abundance of top-tier special teams coordinators that you could use to replace Rich Bisaccia?
Yeah, all good questions, Brad. Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to really any of them. And once we get to talk to some people, I will certainly try to get the answers to those questions. I would say this, though, and look, this is, again, an educated guess, not a report. But, like, why would Matt LaFleur push him out 38 days after the season ended?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that to me, because I do think that there's a portion of the fan base that wants to think, hey, this is – finally, Matt LaFleur grew some stones and pushed this guy out. And they just framed it as him stepping down. But that just defies logic to me, because if that's what you wanted to do, first of all, you probably wanted to do it earlier for the reasons you mentioned in terms of having other options and other people to interview than the guys that are going to be interviewing here. But number two, like, let's say you wanted to have some measure of stability and keep a lot of the things you like about special teams. But maybe you thought it was, you know, maybe the game or time had passed Rich Bisaccia by. So you wanted to say, all right, Rich, you know, we'd like to keep you around as the associate head coach. We're really excited about Byron Storer. He's got a lot of your qualities and a lot of your ideas, but, you know, we'd like some new ideas on special teams as well. And then they could have promoted him. Instead, they waited a week longer than that after he'd left for the Browns. Like, that's the problem that I have, is not only is the time, does the timing not make sense for the reasons I mentioned, but also because there was a guy that was on the staff that would have been the ideal in-house candidate if you like a lot of the things that you felt you were doing right and you wanted to keep that going, but you wanted to move on from Bisaccia. So I have a very hard time believing that this was anything other than what it's being presented as. And that's not because I swallow the storyline, you know, just straight from whatever the Packers say. That's because it just doesn't make sense the other way.
Jason Woodley joining us here on Kyle Bruston-Ortman across ESPN Wisconsin. To follow up on that, Jason, our conversation yesterday, there was many of them, but one that stuck out was the idea that, is it the systematic way that Goody builds rosters, or was it Rich? Because if you think about it, when Rich was hired, it seemed like he was the best candidate for the job, right? And he's known as a good coach. But Goody also mentioned, which we don't know what to believe and not to believe in that 38-minute press conference the other week, that they've made more of an investment in special teams. So, like, I guess, where do you go from here? Because if you hire someone, I could make the argument that it's the infrastructure of why they aren't successful in special teams. Because even if you want to, like, Tausch is big on, like, hey, I want special teams to be better. But you also got to worry about the offensive line, the defensive line, and cornerbacks, and they have to restructure some things for their cap space. So I guess I don't know how the puzzle fits together to make the special teams better next year with a new coach anyway.
Yeah, good, really good point, Ben. And I would say that, you know, was it Bisaccia or was it Goody and the infrastructure? Yes, right? It's both. It's undeniably both. And for instance, you know, and I mentioned this to Tausch today, like, you know, to be fair to Goody, which he's been known to occasionally accuse me of not being, you know, look, Zane Anderson, Bo Melton, Nick Neiman, Christian Welch, Aaron Mosby. Those are not household names on the Packers roster. They're all there primarily as special teams guys.
I saw Nick Niemann getting scored on in the playoff game.
Well,
2-point conversion.
Yeah, nice. So to defend Goody, he has made more investments in having guys that are primarily special teams players on the roster. That's definitely true. But at the same time, let's talk about the return game, right? I mean, you guys have heard me say this. Like, they put it as such a low priority that when Jaden Reed gets hurt in week two, they're trotting Matthew Golden out there, who, and Brad obviously knows this from punting two players. Catching a punt is not easy.
No, it's not.
And it takes a lot of reps and practice. I mean, you just think back to the when they used to do the pickle catch before games at Lambeau, right, where they'd put a helmet on some fan and they try to catch the ball. Like, I'm not saying that that's what Matthew Golden looked like, but it wasn't far off, right? Like, he didn't know. Like, it is an art.
Romeo Doubs was like an outfielder. He took a first step backwards every time.
Right. And so, for me, that part, like, the fact that, I mean, I say it often just because it's so amazing to me that the first time Matthew Golden ever returned a punt was in an NFL game.
Unbelievable.
That's stunning.
Like, he'd never done it in his life. And Savion Williams, who was billed as a kick returner, he had 14 career kickoff returns at TCU in 5 seasons, and they all came as a true freshman. So he hadn't returned a kickoff in a game in 4 years. So, you know, you saw what Rashid Shaheed did for the Seahawks. You saw what Keyshawn Nixon did when he was actually returning kickoffs for the Packers. We saw Micah Hyde had 3 punt returns for a touchdown in a single season. And then they inexplicably chose not to re-sign him, which was totally stupid. But my point is that it's both. And, you know, they tried it with the young kicker, who Rich Bisaccia had the relationship with his brother. That was a mistake, right? I mean, he's bounced around a little bit, but I don't think he's on anybody's roster now. Goody, in his first draft, used a draft pick on a punter and a draft pick on a long snapper.
J.K. Scott,
so,
yeah.
It's all those things. And look, as Brad well knows, the challenge of special teams is you can have a really good punter like Brad or Daniel Whelan, but then there are other areas that if you're not effective, then the big picture of special teams is not positive. And so, they've got their work cut out for them, but Ben, you made the exact point that needed to be made. Not only do they have to improve or repair or do whatever they need to do to their special teams, but let's not get it twisted. They got to get their offensive line fixed. They got to add the corner is still, in my opinion, their biggest need, and they need defensive line help. And if they let Quay Walker walk, they got to figure out what exactly they're going to do at linebacker. They got a lot of work to do this offseason. It's a big offseason.
Biggest need. I already feel like I'm at the NFL draft.
Yeah, there is a lot they need to do. But, Jason, NFL.com ranked Jordan Love as the 14th best quarterback season this year when you have season and playoffs. And that's
ridiculous.
Behind folks like Burrow, Jackson, and also Caleb Williams. Now, Jason, was Jordan's season only average?
No, it was better than that. But, again, I don't know. Somewhere, I would argue he's somewhere between 8 and 12 if you kind of take the body of work of the season. And look, there were times, I mean, frankly, look at the playoff game. And I don't blame Jordan for the second half ineptitude. Like, they made an adjustment. They brought pressure, and the Packers' offensive line didn't do a good enough job of protecting him against it. That's why those first four drives of the second half all ended in punts. But the fact of the matter is that he's not the finished product. You know, Evan went on a rant with us during the week.
Bad rant.
Not only that, it caught the attention of Micah Parsons' brother, who retweeted it. But we know what we're accustomed to, obviously, from the other quarterbacks. He's not there, obviously. Do I think he can still get there? I do. I think he's a good quarterback. Is he going to be a great quarterback? I don't know. But he sure as hell wasn't the 14th best quarterback. Like, I like Justin Herbert a lot, right? My best friend's younger brother went to high school with him. I've always pulled for him. He seems like a great dude in my interactions and experience with him. but he was out better than Jordan Love this season. Not only that, was he was like fifth on that list. Fifth! I thought Sam Darnold's reclamation project was a fantastic story, but don't tell me that the
regular
Seahawks,
season.
Well, I mean, he threw 13 picks and fumbled the ball. Like, he led the NFL in turnovers. Like, Jordan Love didn't do that either. So
yeah, and just to clarify, the article Kyle referenced said it took the whole body of work of regular season and playoffs.
Right, and what did Jordan Love
320
threw for like 300
plus and four touchdowns.
And four touchdowns with no picks.
Zero turnovers.
Like, wait, we're gonna, so what? How did, I don't think the playoff grade should be dragging him down. He didn't, it's not like he got an F on the final. Like, he
while
didn't get an
coming
a
back
they
from a concussion, not missing a beat.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, I'm also the guy that, and I believe this, it's not hot takery, that the Packers, the reason why the season went the way it did is because they lost the two players they could least afford to lose. And that includes Love, because I think they had a better backup option who could have still won games in Malik Willis than they had behind Micah Parsons, as Rashawn Gary didn't do anything to elevate his game, and in the backup behind Tucker Kraft in that Luke Musgrave did nothing to really elevate his game. The only reason the offense in the passing game clicked after losing Tucker Kraft was when eventually Christian Watson came back and hit the ground running the way he did. So, again, I don't understand how on earth anyone put him 14th. I don't like to criticize other people's work. I hate this time of the year because everybody's trying to conjure up content and they do a bunch of lists. But this list, it's an unserious list when he's all the way down at 14.
Cook,
Jason.
Cook.
Good job.
Jason, we appreciate the time, and I know Kyle did as well. We'll talk to you on
Monday.
All right,
guys.
Okay.
Sounds good. Take care. Be good.
Jason Woolley, host of Woolley & Tausch, 9 to noon across these various stations. Coming up next, after we just talked about Rich Bisaccia, Brad, as a former punter and special teamer, has a solution after Rich Bisaccia not only was a special teams coordinator, but was an associate head coach. Helping with situations. How do you solve both of those after he's gone with both roles? Next.